Hey everybody, you're listening to Top Quartile, where we bring you stories from the front lines of growth in community-focused financial services. Well, hello and welcome. I'm Dan Marks, partner and EVP at Infusion, and I'm really excited to have Jared Freeman on the show today. He's the president and CEO of OnPath Federal Credit Union, and it's got an interesting story that we're excited to have him share. Jared, how are you?
I'm good, Dan. I really appreciate you having me on today and looking forward to a good discussion.
Yeah. For everybody listening, Jared kind of has already overcome a challenge this morning and made sure that he was on the show. So that just kind of speaks to forging the path ahead. So Jared, tell us about your role at OnPath.
Yeah, so I get the opportunity to serve as our president and CEO here at OnPath Federal Credit Union. Been here, gosh, I guess going on 10, 11 months. It is a wild and exciting ride. Really, really enjoy it. It's just a fun organization to be a part of, serving our 65,000 members in the greater New Orleans area.
Cool. Jared, what's maybe one fascinating thing that most people don't know about you?
Yeah, you know, Dan, I really had to think hard about this question because I think I'm kind of a nerd. And so I don't know that I have all that much that's fascinating. But, you know, I would say, especially here in New Orleans, a lot of my coworkers would probably be really surprised to know that I do play the piano. I'm self-taught, taught myself in high school and college, and actually even played in church for a few years, but that's been several years ago. So I do enjoy it. I need to dust off the keys. Haven't played enough lately. Been working too much, but I do enjoy it.
Oh, that's awesome. We've had several guests with some hidden musical talent, and so that's awesome to hear different instruments. So if we, you know, at some point we'll line up all the guests into
a podcast band.
That's right, a top quartet or something. Well, cool. So tell me, you mentioned you'd relatively recently joined OnPath. What's been the story there at OnPath? What's been happening? What's the growth been like?
Yeah. So, you know, OnPath has just a tremendous history and legacy. We've been around 60 years, actually celebrating our 60th anniversary this year as an organization. So we're real excited about that. We had to Google it, but it's apparently the diamond anniversary. And so we kind of had fun with that. And actually, I think my VP of marketing told me we may be even giving away a diamond to a member this year. I'm not sure, but some fun things there. Like everybody, you know, this year with COVID and with all the stimulus, of course, we've had tremendous growth in deposits, a little bit more growth than actually we probably care to have, you know, because it's hard to kind of keep pace on our loan front with those deposits. But we're excited about that. We've done pretty well with lending, like a lot of people last year. Of course, mortgage lending was very, very strong, continues to be very, very strong this year. We certainly haven't seen any decreases there. And then we've also really tried to re-engage a lot of our members who I think had some pent-up demand for new cars, for, you know, fun toys and things like that. And so we've seen a lot of consumer loan growth that's not mortgage related. And so pretty excited about that. You know, I don't know that we've grown membership quite as much as we have hoped in the last several months, but we do see that picking up as well.
Yeah, you know, that's a trend we hear from just about everybody we talk to in the industry. Is I think everybody saw a slowdown in new member, new customer acquisition, but tremendous growth within the member base. So makes sense. What are some of your key strategies as you've been there on the OnPath team for close to a year? What are some of the things that you either put in place historically or are putting in place now to kind of continue that momentum?
Yeah, you know, Dan, I think this is probably a much simpler answer than a lot of people probably pay a lot of consultants to come in and tell them. But, you know, I really want OnPath to be easy, to be easy to use, to be simple, to be frictionless. You know, I want our members to have an experience where, honestly, they may not think about it a whole lot after the fact. You know, sometimes I think in this industry, we're a little maybe a narcissistic. I don't know. And we assume that our members or our customers think about us all the time. I don't think that's actually true. In fact, if they do think about us all the time, it may mean that we're making them mad. And so, you know, I really want it to be a real simple, easy, painless process that it's just so intuitive that they don't really think about. And so, you know, one of the biggest things, most things I'm proud of probably is we've started a process that we call journey mapping. A lot of organizations have probably done this, but really taking really taking a product or a service or a delivery channel kind of bit by bit, piece by piece, using our knowledge base of employees, you know, from accounting to frontline to back office, so on and so forth, and kind of tearing apart that process and really figuring out what are the sticky points, what's difficult, what's confusing, how can we make this better, and kind of making sure that all of our processes are just really intuitive and easy and frictionless, and we don't make anything more difficult than it has to be. And so that's kind of what we've spent a lot of our time doing, especially, you know, the latter part of the COVID time, maybe when the lobbies were still slow, things like that. And so it's already paying dividends. We're seeing some huge success from that. And so I think that's going to be really big. You know, I think as we have to increasingly compete with the fintechs of the world, you know, we have something they don't, and that's people. We can blend our high tech, our high technology, our automation, so on and so forth, with that human element. And I think if we can blend those two together well, that's where we win.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to sort of simplify the mission down to something that's simple and easy, and then pay that off. I mean, the hard work you're talking about, the journey mapping, you know, it's easy to say and takes a lot of time to do it well. So,
yeah, you know, I think we spent 3 to 4 months on applying for a credit card online. I mean, you know, it's a very painful process, but the data points, the things that you learn, you just have paid huge dividends. I've been very impressed with that.
Cool. So you're seeing a boost in online credit card originations after those improvements have been put in place?
Yeah, just real, honestly, real simple changes that we've made. We haven't made them all yet. You know, the process really for that just ended a few weeks ago, but we've already seen some big changes. Just simple things, even like Visa doesn't require an ink signature to have a credit card that's branded with Visa. And so we eliminated that. The big credit card companies of the world did that years ago, of course. Sometimes in credit union land, we tend to be a little behind, lag behind on things like that. And so just eliminating that one piece where a member actually has to sign that form has seen, you know, huge success rate.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And talk about a timing, as you said, with all the changes with COVID. When you think about that journey mapping, would you consider that kind of a transformation of the way you're doing business?
I thought about that and thought about, you know, original ideas or anything like that. You know, I don't know that we're doing anything original to us. I don't actually think I'm all that creative. I'm really good at researching other people's good ideas and implementing them where it makes sense. But I do think it's going to have a huge transformation for our member experience, which is going to, of course, drive member growth, member profitability, you know, share of wallet, those types of things. And so I think that's going to make a big transformation. And like I said, mixing that high tech with the high touch is going to be very transformative, you know, in a time where we see a lot of brick and mortar banking going away. You know, in our market here in the greater New Orleans area, we're seeing a lot of banks pull out, large banks, and closing those brick and mortar locations. Admittedly, maybe they had too many already, but, you know, we're taking advantage of that. And we really want to shift, you know, our strategy of brick and mortar banking and try to do that well and serve our members well. And so I think all those things together will be truly transformative.
Yeah, it is. I mean, so you mean your members can actually walk into a branch and talk to a real human that can actually solve their problem?
They can actually talk to a real human. I know, it's crazy.
And when they call in, they actually talk to somebody there locally in the market, huh?
Yeah, you know, and I'll share a quick success story. Obviously, during COVID, you know, everybody was working from home and technology wasn't all that we wanted it to be. And so we had some high abandonment rate in our call center. And I'm very proud to say today, that's completely different. You know, our average wait time, I looked the other day, was about a minute and 10 seconds for our members. And so when you imagine that you have thousands of phone calls a day for a relatively small company, we only have 140 employees, even fewer, of course, in our call center. I think that's a pretty large accomplishment. Very proud of our team for doing that. Of course, all makes a difference, right? You know, I try to tell some of our young borrowers, our young members, our young employees even, hey, fintech's great until you have a problem. And then who are you going to call? Who are you going to talk to? And I even challenged a few of them, you know, nothing against Cash App or any of those things, but challenged them to call and see if they could get a human. And it's been quite humorous to see their responses to that, which of course is no.
There you go. That actually sparks some interesting marketing ideas too. And I bet they also, when they call, they don't have to wade through 17 different menu prompts to actually get to the person.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think the options there are so limitless. There's so much that's kind of coming to market with artificial intelligence that you can help serve those members, you know, 24/7 with that. But of course, while we can staff our call center with real live humans, you know, during quote unquote normal business hours, that's definitely what we want to do. We feel like even though it kind of sounds old fashioned, that's going to become a competitive advantage in the future.
Yeah, for sure. As people have more digital complexity in their lives. So you mentioned research and analytics here a couple of times. How do you approach using understanding kind of member behavior and member attitudes to inform everything you're doing?
Yeah, you know, Dan, this is one of those that I think we often overcomplicate. You know, I think in our industry specifically, you know, big data, we heard big data 10 years ago, like it was this mystical thing. And reality is we all have more data of our members than we even realize. And we have for a long, long time, you know, and so it's really finding a way to actually apply that in a practical way that means something. I love to hear my peers talk about this dashboard and that dashboard and what they have on member behaviors or member trends, so on and so forth. But you always stump them when you ask, well, what did you do with it? How did you apply it? How did you improve the member experience or serve your members better or make the organization more profitable, more efficient, what have you? And then you get a lot of blank stares. And so I try to take a pretty straightforward, simplistic approach to that. We have invested in some, you know, cloud-based data lake technology that will hopefully streamline that, really help us dashboard that better, and really take all of our data points that we already have and sort of put them in one location with a standard language that can make that data really easily accessible and practically usable.
Yeah, practical application of analytics is really, you know, that's an underserved buzzword.
Absolutely. And then really even trying to figure out, you know, okay, you know, maybe some behavior, but you have to kind of get to the psychology of, what are the drivers of that behavior? You know, what is it about our world, our economy, our market, what have you, that's maybe driving that behavior, and then really speak to that. Don't necessarily speak to the symptom, but speak to the driver.
Yeah. I worked with a really smart creative director one time that she had a great expression that I've stolen because I think it's just that good. And it's, she always talked about understand the need behind the ask. So when somebody asks you to do something, understand what they're trying to accomplish, even if they didn't necessarily describe that exactly. And I just think that's just a profound example of what you just said. So that's awesome. Really taking a pragmatic approach and saying, what am I going to do with the analytics that we use? And then going to do it. Think about the old Jeff Bezos, you know, ideas are easy, execution's hard.
Absolutely.
You kind of given some hints along the way, but how would you describe your kind of leadership philosophy and approach?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a good question. You probably should ask my employees and they might give you a different answer, but I'm a huge proponent of collaboration. I know everyone says that. That's easy to say. I hate being the smartest person in the room, and I don't think I'm that smart. And so I really, really want, you know, a team of people around me that are masters of their skill, masters of their trade, whatever that may be, and then leverage that. You know, we talk so much about diversity and inclusion and all those things today, and all that's great. But, you know, the purpose, if you will, or the driver behind all of that, what really helps you be more successful are those different perspectives. You know, I have my frame of reference from my life and my life experiences, and I can relate to some people with that, but I can't relate to everyone. And so, you know, I really like to leverage, you know, the group around me every day, the team, to make decisions, to, you know, think what's best. What did we miss? You know, what questions have we not asked yet? Obviously, ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, I'm charged with the responsibility of making those final decisions. But, you know, I definitely try hard to push the team to give me their opinion. I don't want a bunch of yes people around me. You know, I really want to hear what you have to say, and I'm going to take that to heart. And so I try to do that, you know, poll the team. They may give you a different answer to that, but that's definitely my intention for sure.
There you go. Well, maybe we'll invite some of your teammates to comment yeah. on the, or maybe we'll ask them to email in, and then we can.
Yeah, there you go. Anonymous email.
That's right. Cool. Well, and so I think it's probably obvious for anybody who's looked you up on LinkedIn, but you were appointed CEO at a relatively young age, which is a great accomplishment. What about, do you think about your kind of approach or past accomplishments that enabled the board of directors there at OnPath to point you to that slot?
Yeah, you know, I've thought about that so many times. What is it that makes me different or something like that? I don't know that I'm all that different than anyone else. I did start working at a very, very young age, started working at a credit union at the age of 16. And it was a very small credit union. We only had 20, 25 or 26 employees. And so by default, that meant that at one second you were collecting a delinquent account, the next second you were changing a light bulb, the next second you were processing a loan application. And so I don't think at that time I understood the rarity of that experience. And I think that definitely helped shape my career path and getting me ready for the next step. I also have had just tremendous mentors, thankfully, in my career that have really pushed me to make decisions, to step up to the plate, to take ownership. And thankfully, I was willing to listen, willing to learn, and did those things. And so, I would be remiss if I didn't give them credit for their mentorship and their leadership. And so thankful for that, and I think I was just willing. I think a lot of people, unfortunately, I'm a millennial, so I can say this. I think a lot of people in my generation, my group, if you will, are scared to make decisions, and I don't really want to get into all the reasons that may or may not be true. I'm not a psychologist by any means, but, I think that's a trait that a lot of folks in my age group share. And thankfully, again, back to mentors, I had mentors that pushed me to make decisions and to own it. And even if I was wrong, I was going to make those decisions and own it. And I did that, and I think that definitely had a profound impact on my career path. And thankfully, impressed and showed the board of directors here that was the case, and they took a chance and hired me.
Well, and so what was kind of briefly that career progression for you from the first credit union up to where you sit today?
Yeah, honestly, I started like below the bottom, right? I was a part-time employee, small organization, started as a teller, a bank teller. Again, very thankful. This was by no design of my own, but my local high school had a co-op program, and they partnered with local businesses to allow you to leave school early and go to work. And then you were graded on your professionalism and your performance and your attendance and all those things. And so a little bit, right place, right time. Very thankful for that, but truly fell in love with the business. I love talking to people. I love helping people. I think money is something that really stresses people out. And for whatever reason, I think, honestly, just some God-given interests and passion and abilities, maybe from, my humble backgrounds of not having a lot of money, I just worked really hard to make sure that I was good with money, that I budgeted wisely, so on and so forth, and just enjoyed helping people with that. Buying cars doesn't stress me out. Buying houses doesn't stress me out. I have this weird thing. I actually enjoy it. And so taking that nervousness away, that heartache away from people was enjoyable to me. I'm really passionate about doing that. And so I think from there, it just kind of led to, whatever they would let me do, I did. If there was something that had to happen on a Saturday, special project, I volunteered for it no matter what it was, partly because I wanted to make money, right? I was a young person trying to pay for my own way and do my own thing. And so I think it just kind of took off from there. I did go to college, degree in finance, MBA, the whole kit and caboodle, and just really stuck with the credit union. I knew that's what I always wanted to do. And so kind of progressed, branch manager, director of operations, so on and so forth, kind of always in that operations lending side of banking. And, had the opportunity. I was actually, I think, 24 maybe when one of my greatest mentors made me the chief operating officer of a actually pretty good size organization in Alabama. And, we've joked since then. Obviously, that was many years ago. And gosh, I'm like, man, did you know what you were doing? when you put me in charge of all of these departments and people, and gosh, the mistakes that I made. But thankfully, again, great mentor, you know, he used to always jokingly say, "Hey, Jared, I need you to make decisions. There's nothing that you can screw up that I can't fix, short of you giving away free cash. Everything else I can fix." And so I took that to heart, and thankfully he meant it, and he didn't fire me for making any of those decisions. And so it just kind of progressed from there.
Well, cool. So as we've talked today, we've kind of covered a lot of ground. What are some of your key takeaways relating to, you know, our industry, leadership, strategy, execution?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to sound super simple, Dan, but it's super hard to do. And again, I attribute this to another mentor of mine from a credit union in Tennessee, but people. It really is all about people. I think about my finance degree, my MBA, all of those things. Some days I think, gosh, I should have got a psychology degree or got you know, some higher education in that, because I feel like if you can truly understand, relate, and communicate well with people coming from just various backgrounds and life experiences, so on and so forth, it makes all the difference in the world. And I say that to say, you can be the smartest person in the world, the hardest working person in the world, whatever the case may be. And if you don't surround yourself with good people, you know, a good team of talented individuals, it's not going to work. And, you know, you can spend millions of dollars in great, wonderful marketing strategies. And Dan, you could probably help them spend that money, do great work. But, you know, if they don't have a team of people that are representing the brand that the marketing is selling day in and day out, it's going to be all for naught in the end. You're going to have disappointed customers, disappointed members. And so I think for me, and maybe this is just my stage of life right now, where I'm at in my career, but it's just very, very people focused, making sure we have the right people on the team in the right positions, doing the right things that are passionate about, you know, what we do every day. And I think all the other problems can be solved from there. You know, obviously you have to put in the work for strategy. You have to have time that you break away from the hustle and bustle of the day to day and kind of get that 30,000 foot level and plan strategically of where you want to be. You know, I think probably you need to even do that more today. I mean, the pace of change, Dan, today is so different than it was when you and I entered banking many, many years ago. Even, you know, that I feel like that pace just keeps accelerating. And so it's kind of hard to stay on the front end of that. And so it's just super important to plan those getaways where you can take a second and not answer emails and not be in the weeds and truly plan, okay, here's what's going on. Here's what we are expecting to happen. How do we stay ahead of this? How do we serve our members better? And, you know, I think you do those things, you're going to win.
Very well said. And so finally, to end on a little bit of fun, if you could kind of go back in time and talk to your younger self, that 16-year-old part-timers just starting at the first credit union, you know, what would you want to tell them about the path ahead?
Oh, gosh, Dan, I thought a lot about this. I think I even thought to myself jokingly, I'd be scared to say anything for fear of messing it up, because I sort of like how things turned out, you know, but it wasn't without challenge. It wasn't without difficulty. It wasn't without a lot of very long nights and early mornings and sacrifice. You know, people often look at young folks that are successful and assume that maybe it was given to them on a silver platter, or it just happened overnight, and it couldn't be further from the truth in this case. And so I would just really try to encourage and support and motivate that 16-year-old version of myself to make sure that you continue to grind hard every day. Don't give up. You know, hard times are actually good for you. They help you to be stronger, faster, smarter, so on and so forth. I think that's really the only thing I would say is don't give up. Keep going. Keep pushing. You know, do all the education you can, volunteer for everything you can, and do it while you're young.
And it sounds like from the comments you made before, it's really seek out those mentors too. Seek out the mentors and listen to what they say.
Yeah, for sure. I wish I'd have been more intentional back then about that. Thankfully, again, a little bit right place, right time. I think that's super, super important, super huge. Definitely something that I hope to give back, you know, to people in our organization and in the areas that I serve. I was very fortunate to have those great mentors.
Well said. Yeah, that's one of the things I love is the opportunity to kind of mentor up and coming folks that have shown, like you said, a willingness and an eagerness and a sense of curiosity. It's neat to be both on both sides of that. It's kind of hard to believe the time has flown by, but Jared, thanks so much again for coming on the show and for sharing your unique point of view with everyone.
Yeah, appreciate it. Glad to be here, glad to be a part, and look forward to listening to all the other future podcasts.
That's it for today on Top Quartile. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Top Quartile wherever you find podcasts on any podcast app. And while you're at it, we'd really appreciate a 5-star rating. And if you're interested in getting an opportunity assessment, head over to infusionmarketinggroup.com to learn more. Thanks for listening.